when they blew that 4-1 lead. So it was cute. But what happened when I got into the gate area, this is what we need to talk about. First slide, please, Kathy. Yeah. Anybody seen one of those? I'm a cat guy, so I'm going to make this clear. I'm a cat guy. Thank you, Tommy. I got one other cat person in the room. That, in Braille, with the leash, is a dog sign. So I'm curious. You know, I always go into the family bathroom because I like my privacy. So I'm like, what is going on here? And I open the door. You're not going to believe this. Thanks. Next slide. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Turf. Water. A little shower thingy for the dog. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a lot of problems on planet Earth. Right? We have a lot of problems. I don't need to mention them. You know where they are. Middle East, Ukraine, slavery. But the dog, the dogs in Victoria are doing better than most. And if you, after finish washing your little doggy down, next slide, please. You can go wash your hands and maybe do a few. And I'm like, wow, we need Jesus. Big time. You can just leave the next slide up, buddy. I'll get to it in quite a while. Well, that's where we were. That's called Thetis Island, and that's going to be part of what I'm talking about today. But Bob, you mentioned a verse about Sabbath in Isaiah 58, and you put a little fire under me, Bob, because I love that verse. It's Mother's Day, and I want to honor moms, and I don't know what your experience of mom is. And it's okay if you have had a great experience with mom and things are going well, good. You should rejoice in that. If your experience with mom and dad isn't exactly what ideal, then a couple things. You want to rejoice that they got you into this world, and you don't want to repeat any of the cycles if there are some negative ones. And Bob read from Isaiah 58, and it reminded me of my mom. And this is the verse that I found. Is not this the fast that I chose? The Israelites are fasting and praying and demonstrating religious ritual in order to get them closer to God. So if we do the right things and tick the boxes and we do the right rituals, we'll get closer to God. God says to them, is this not the fast that I've chosen? To loose the bonds of wickedness, undo the straps of the yoke, let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread and mine with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover him, don't hide yourself from your own flesh. Jet lag set in this morning. And it was tempting at about 6:30, because I couldn't sleep, to say, hey, Matt, you want to do the sermon today? It was tempting. But everything in me said, you have to go to church today, and you have to go now. And I left super early. You get those little kind of unctions in your gut that says you should go. And I'm driving up Nottawasaga. It's Highway 6, and no one is ever on that road. It's great. It's quiet. I can enjoy some praise music. But I just left everything off today. And as I'm driving, you always see on these little roads, you always see on the roads some type of poor animal that was unfortunate and didn't make it through the night. So you see all these little animals on the road that have been hit. Well, today, it looked like a bunch of garbage stretched across the middle of the road this morning. And I thought, well, that's curious. And as I got closer, no other cars. It was a steep hill. And in the just at the crest of the hill, there's a man this morning. He was riding down the hill, lost control of his bike, and he was in the middle of the road. And there could be cars zipping over there. So I stopped, he had clearly hit his head, fallen off the bike, and he was literally in the middle of the road groaning and rocking back and forth alone. And I pulled over and asked him his name. All he could do is groan. He was concussed. He was bleeding from here, knees, cuts everywhere. He had fallen off his bike, obviously. And I called 911 and went through what they do. And guy pulls in, coming the other way, and he's a biker because he's got his bike stuff on. So he immediately looks at the bike. Oh, the bike wasn't hit. Checks that out because the 911 were asking me if he got hit. And then I get this fear in my gut. I'm alone with a guy in the middle of the road. Maybe I'll get accused of hitting him. So that flashed through my mind for a second, but boom, you do the Good Samaritan thing. And then finally, the next guy comes by the other way. And you know, if we weren't there, boy, it would have been easy to run that guy over. And the guy comes and he pulls over and he says to me, "Is everything okay?" I go, "Oh, this guy just fell, 911. He said, "I'm an emergency doctor." And he helped. And there was three of us there, and the police came and the paramedics came. And my wife was singing the other day at home, "His eye is on the sparrow, and he watches over me." Ken, his name was Ken, he came to after a while. He was very concussed, didn't know where he was, and then he started talking. I said, "Ken, can we call someone?" I called his wife. She called back, and I left a message, and she was just overwhelmed. You just never know those opportunities that you may get in the course of any day when God gives you that little whisper from heaven that says, "You need to do this now." So this week, be open to those little things. So my mom was like that. When I read this verse, "Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house?" My mother would be in the category of the book of Acts when they looked at Peter and John coming out of the temple. They just raised a lame man who was lame from birth. And the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were astonished. They were ordinary, unschooled men, but they could see that they had been with Jesus. My mom was an ordinary, unschooled Italian who loved Jesus, and you could tell she'd been with him. So one day, I was at school with my friend Barry. He was my best friend at the time. And we came home and had a little cup of tea or snack together. And Barry didn't go home that day. And then the next day, Barry's mom and five kids were in our house. And I was always afraid of Barry's dad. You guys know what it's like when you're around that father who can have these flashes of anger. I was always afraid of him. And sure enough, he would beat up his wife on a regular basis. And my mom, when this poor woman came over with her son Barry, all beat up, said, "Well, why don't you just stay with us?" She didn't call the CAS. She didn't put any of the regular channels in place that you should do. I'm not saying not to do that. But my mom would read the Bible and say, "Oh, homeless, poor, afflicted, hurt, oppressed, come and stay with us." It happened over and over again. And they didn't stay for 2 weeks. They stayed for 3 to 6 months. In a tiny house. And there's people in this room who've done that and are doing that. And that is the side of the gospel where you make a decision to love someone and it's hard. And I really appreciate that about this church because you just do that so very, very well. My mom taught me love God and love your neighbors yourself. That's the first thing she ever taught me. Next thing, my mom was a big football fan. Her brother Johnny loved football. They would go down, can you imagine my little Italian mom going down to Miami, Florida and watching college football? And if you know my mom, and some of you do, it's like, wow, a little 5-foot-nothing white-haired ball of fire. Love Jesus, love football. And she would come to all my football games. And she taught me something I'll never forget during one of my football games. it was pouring rain, and it was at a place called Bernie Arbor Stadium, and I love teaching football now. So when you teach football, if the ball comes near your face, you put your pinkies and your thumbs together. If it comes down here, sorry, index finger and thumb. If the ball comes down here, you put your pinkies together. So my mom was watching me play football one year, and the game was, we're down by 5 points, and it's pouring rain, the lights are on, and it's over for our team. But we got one play, and my buddy Terry calls a fake, and the fake punt is to me. So heart rate gets going pretty high, and we're on about 20-yard line. And instead of catching the ball like you're supposed to, like that over my shoulder, I'll never forget running in my pattern, put my pinkies together, and I went like that and covered my eye. Terry was so good. He put the ball right in that spot. I caught the ball, ran into the end zone, and I could just feel my team stacking up against me and celebrating that particular moment in my life. And as the rain came down and it was all pouring wet, I walked out to the parking lot, because you know when you're 15 and you don't usually walk out with your mom, I was too cool, and there was my mom in the parking lot, pouring rain, tears coming down her face, proud of her son. And we had this moment of celebration. In the book of Zephaniah, it says, the Lord your God in the midst of you is mighty. He will save. He will rejoice over you with love. He will rejoice over you with singing. The Lord your God in the midst of you is mighty. And I thought today, when I was thinking about that story, if I had lost that game and dropped the ball, that encounter with my mom would have been exactly the same. Her in tears, pouring rain, proud of her son. And you have a God who celebrates you. I don't know if you've thought of that. A God who celebrates who you are and wants to save you and shower you and celebrate you. Whether you're an abject failure or you won the game. And that's part of what God does. This week was particularly significant in our lives as a group of people. We were out on Thetis Island, and I introduced, we're going to get to this painting, I introduced those who came to a friend of mine named Martin. And while I was reffing football with Martin, I noticed he was a bit of a shy man amongst, I mean, if you want to get around toxically masculine people, go to football. Go watch football games. Crazy, tough, psycho, and the referees are the same. Martin was a bit more gentle, though. And I'm watching this one game we're reffing together, and I'll never forget one of the coaches just kind of whispered in my ear, have you seen number 16? And I went, this is the under 14 girls. We had been reffing the over 16 boys, which was nuts. But then this young girls group, 14-year-olds, were playing. And I said, yeah, I've seen number 16 or 14. She's catching every ball. She's totally in the game. She looks excited. He goes, look closer. And every kid wears something on their hands called a cutter. And a cutter glove is a glove that can is a little sticky, and it catches the ball better. And I looked at her hands when she was going to catch passes, and the fingers were floppy. She was born without fingers. And he said, you can't see it under her cleats, but she doesn't have any toes. I don't know if you've tried walking without your big toe. It's impossible. Your balance is in your big toe. She didn't have one. She didn't have any fingers. And this girl played her guts out, and you couldn't tell. She scored, she ran, it was amazing. And again, being the big suck I am, we're giving high fives at the end of the game. She walks by. I'm so inspired by this kid. She literally, Sophie, just put your hand up like this. I walked by her, and there were the cutter gloves flopping, and I just went, oh, you are so inspiring. And that's something my mother would have done, because she just loves the underdog. And when the whole football tournament was over, there was something different about that team of 14-year-olds, because they were just united around maybe this girl, maybe she was excited to be playing. And I'll never forget walking out, and it's pouring rain again, and I wanted to say goodbye to Martin, my referee buddy. And as I walked over to see Martin, he was way over there, one of the girls from that team went, "Hey, there's our favorite referee." I don't know if you've been in a situation before with referees, whether it's football, hockey. People hate referees. Like, if you knew some of the things people called me while I'm reffing, I mean, anybody gets upset with me here, that's a piece of cake. I've been called some nasty things. And this little girl runs over, "Hey, there's a favorite referee." Her whole team, including this little girl with all the fingers, ran over, boom, big cluster hug. And my mom just made it really clear to me, if you genuinely love people, even if you're a referee, they'll love you back. I could give you the Greek words for love and the Hebrew words for fasting and wax eloquent on theology. But at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself the question, do you really love people? And do you really want to be around them, especially the ones that are uncomfortable? And God, in his mercy, will do that in and through you and me. So my friend Martin, we go out for lobster. And it's Halifax, so we go for lobster. And Martin had a rainbow flag, he had a rainbow lanyard, and we were talking about relationships, and he confessed his past and some of the pain in his past. In 1973, he went to Bible camp, and he was given a Bible, and he wrote 1973, and he was told at that Bible camp, "You can have a relationship with Jesus, a close relationship." And he'd never heard that before. And in 1973, he made a profession of faith and then drifted away and got involved in many, many different pursuits, many different pursuits. And I met him way, way down the road on his journey. And he said to me, when we were out for lunch, one of our buddies had confessed his father had some really difficult problems growing up, and in real time, Martin counseled this buddy of ours, and I watched this man in the most beautiful way enter into a relationship with this other man, and it said a lot to me. But Martin was clearly away from anything Christian at that time. And I went home and said, "Martin, if you want to come and visit any of the guys, come and see me. Our doors are always open. My mother taught me that. Welcome mat's always open." So he called and said, "Dan, my dad doesn't want to see me. He has dementia. I'm in Toronto. Is that offer still open? Would you still come and spend some time with me?" And I said, "Sure." And he met my wife and went out for ice cream. And early in the morning, I opened my Bible and I started to read it. And he was reminded of his childhood with his Bible. And he said, "Wow, I haven't seen a Bible in so long. Not really interested. I've gone the way of atheism and not interested in the Bible anymore." And I said, "That's fine. Let's go for ice cream and have a few days together." My wife treated him very special, as I did. This wonderful, wonderful weekend together. And he calls 3 weeks later and says, "Dan, I have cancer. Could you please pray for me?" And I said, "Sure." He had cancer in his throat, and it got progressively worse, stage 4. And he said, "Dan, they're removing my tongue. I'm really afraid. I'm really afraid. Could you pray for me? I doubt that there's a God, but somehow you know him. So could you please pray for me?" And I did. 3 years this went on. And then in the middle of the pandemic, he said, "I found a church of people who really love me, and I'm getting back to my roots, and I'm reading my Bible, and I'm getting baptized this week. Would you tune in and watch my baptism?" And he said during his baptism, there's a man, and he didn't use my name. He said, there's a man and woman in Toronto who invited me over, and they were kind to me. And it was the last step in God's providence in bringing me back to himself. And Martin bought that painting around that time. And I said, Martin, I'm bringing some friends out to a Bible college to do some ministry, and we're going to be listening to some great Bible teachers. Would you come? Oh, I'd love to come. And we sit down for breakfast. He's got to feed himself through a feeding tube, because when you don't have a tongue, you can't swallow properly. So he's got a feeding tube. Sat down with Rod and Lisa, and he said, I've never been at a meal with other people for a long time. I'm embarrassed. And as she does so well, Lisa just started talking to him like he was a relative and engaged him and asked him a bundle of questions. And Rod and I had a chance to talk, and she just made this guy feel like a million bucks. It's pretty precious. And he came over to camp, and he heard from the Lord. Like, we had some really good Bible teachers, and he was overwhelmed. And he said to me, Dan, I have to show you something. He said, I went down to the beach today, and I have a painting in my living room. I've had it for years. And I realized today for the first time that that painting, next slide, please, it's of Thetis Island. Met him in Halifax, buys a random painting of that actual scene. And I couldn't help but think of Psalm 72. And he will have dominion from sea to sea. He will have dominion from sea to sea. We get to participate in a God who is saving people and bringing them to himself of every walk. And we had a wonderful time together. Here's Martin. Thanks for the last slide. We're in the car, and my wife said, he looks so healthy and so happy. I said, yeah, he's brand new. Like Bob, he's born again. It's brand new. God changes us from the inside out. My mother taught me that when I was a little kid. She's been with Jesus for a long time, but God's still in the business of changing people when you spend time with him and love him like Jesus did, because he's in you and running through you. And that's a lot to be thankful for, eh, George? So why don't you guys come up here and we can give thanks for all God's doing here and in our midst. As you come, George, I'll just read something in closing. Again, my mom taught me to always spend time with those on the margin. As you know, many of you know, I supply teach as a fun thing to do because I'm a retired teacher. Very marginalized kid at school, 12, 13 years old, blue hair and hat on and not many people talking to her in class. And I took the time just to sit with her during library period. And I talked to her about, she loves to read and likes to write. I said, oh, there's some really cool books you can read. So here's a 12-year-old kid hearing about Alexander Solzhenitsyn, Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, all the greats of the past. And she was so excited. And a couple times I had a little interaction with her. Very simple, just very honest, just talking. And she wrote this. I'm sorry you have to deal with my horrible handwriting again. However, I'm better at writing over speaking. I just wanted to say thank you for coming to teach this class. Not only do you teach us as a whole with school subjects, but also how to be good human beings, things we actually need for life. I can't thank you enough for spending time with me. My confidence is different, and I appreciate what you've done. Looking forward to having you back to class. Just a conversation. The Bible puts it this way, a cup of cold water given in my name, eh? Lots to be thankful for, and thank you for leading us in worship. Mm-hmm.